Avenue is open. Welcome, committee. Good morning, everyone. We will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4117, Portland School District Bonding Measure. Day is here to walk us through what the bill does and give us perspective on what needs to be fixed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 4117 came to us via House Revenue Committee, where we had a very vigorous discussion about why this bill was needed. So to understand why this bill is here, I wanted to give you a little background information. So in 1997, ballot measure 50 amended the Constitution to add a new limit to Oregon's local property tax system. And a measure 50 property tax limit is usually lower than measure 5 limit, thus creating a gap between the two. Measure 50 allowed the use of this gap with various restrictions. And in 1999, the legislature allowed school districts to seek voter approval of local option property tax for operational expenses with 5-year limit can be renewed. Legislature did was this was local districts raising revenue for their local operating expenses on top of Measure 50. Measure 50 created a permanent rate-based levy, and the property taxes collected from there will flow into so-called a formula revenue pool. And that money is distributed based on ADMW to school districts and ESDs. Now, this local option property taxes is not part of formula revenue. So locals need revenue to be used within the districts. So a legislature excluded this local option property tax from the definition of local revenue in the school funding equalization formula. But with the equalization in mind, actually, legislature didn't want to defeat the spirit of formula revenue equalization, following the concept of equity, put a couple of limits. At the time, it's 1999, of course, and the limit was the local school districts can actually raise through this option to the lesser of 10% of formula revenue or 500 per weighted student. Now, these limits, of course, reflecting changing times, increased over time, and the last time we increased was 2007 when there was House Bill 2641. Increased these two limits, of course, still the lesser of the two. One was the 500 limit was raised to 1,000 per weighted student, and 10% of formula revenue was to was raised to 20% of formula revenue. And the same bill actually escalated this 1,000 limit by 3% per year. So for 17-18, the limit is $1,343.92. Corvallis School District started local option in 1999, wanted to raise $15 million only to realize only half of it because of compression loss. Currently, 20 school districts, as of 16-17, 20 school districts use local option. And the total amount, this is not the collected amount, just imposed amount was 170 million. And we have PPS at about 86 million. Now again, this is imposition of local option taxes, not the collected one, not the amount in their accounting book, because collection rate is lower than 100%. So this is the history of local option taxes imposed. You see fluctuations, if not for compression loss, actually, local option taxes would have been increasing rather smoothly. But in later years,
Well, I got this in mind. Collection rate, you said, is not 100%, and I understand that. But are we right around that 97, 98%, somewhere in there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Could you go back one slide, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
So following Senator Bertschinger's question today, so what he just said is that bottom line number is 170, right? It's about 97 or 98%. But are there wide fluctuations in that list of schools?
In terms of collection rates?
Yes.
That's the state average. And depending on, we have county level, actually. And then we have county level data. And according to ODE, the latest number that I have is for school districts only, it's about 96, a little over 96%. So it's. I don't have district data itself. I can look into it, but I bet there are varying degrees of collection rates.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Since you've already blown everybody's argument that's come and seen me out of the water on both sides, okay. And I was told this is specifically really a targeted Portland Public Schools issue. Whether that's true or false, I don't know. But do you have any sense of the, can you help me out, Senator, 86 million dollars that Portlanders said that they were willing to raise for Portland, what the collection rate is on the $86 million? And I'm assuming this is a yearly amount, or is this a total amount?
So out of 86.8 million, the county imposed, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The data that I have is about 84 million.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And please, this is on a yearly basis.
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Chair Haas. But this is because the counties, of course, collect the revenue. When obviously there's seven school districts in Multnomah County. So is it broken out actually by the school district, or is it?
It's PPS.
It is, okay.
So the reason, actually, later the proponents would argue that because there is a widening gap between Measure 5 and Measure 50 tax limits, and there is a little more room for local option taxes, that could help all the school districts in the state, if they feel needed to raise additional revenue, they can take advantage of this increasing gap, actually, Measure 5 and Measure 50 gap.
Sorry, thank you, Chair Haas. But this is not, so folks know, this does not include the construction bonds. And so there's a lot of other raising of funds going on that has nothing to do with this.
Right. Construction bond is outside the limit, and this discussion has nothing to do with it.
Right, exactly.
So so the reason we're discussing this is this is for operating expenses, and the great majority of operating expenses will come from formula revenue distribution. And this is on top of that, actually, as district need more operating expenses. And if the voters approve, actually, there's important qualifier. If the voters approve, they can actually raise limit up to a certain limit. One of the things that I want to discuss is the is what happened after 2014 PPS bond measure passage, actually. At the time, the real estate market was improving, but not as vigorously as before, actually. At the time, you were seeing quite a bit of just booming real estate market. But that's a reflection of what's been happening in the past 2 or 3 years. And then and then what happened was after the passage of 2014, the real estate market continued to improve much vigorously. And as a consequence, if you look at the revenue estimate by assessor's office at the time when this bond measure was for a vote, they estimated a certain amount that could be raised because of PPS, this bond measure. That estimate was way below what was actually collected, way below. So the estimate was ranging between 60 to 70 million for the next 5 years. But then actually, starting from 15-16, the collection was way over 70 million. And 16-17, the collection in post taxes was close to 86-87 million. So the estimate at the time of voter at the vote in 2014, the estimate was much below what was happening in the next 2 or 3 years, and it's the anticipated imposition of this local option taxes in the next couple of years will be much higher than what was estimated in 2014. We look at the data, and we learned some lessons. Going forward, these are the lessons that we have data. We're looking at the data very carefully, but we often miss the turning point, and this is one of the occasions when the forecasters missed that turning point. The real estate market often lags behind the economy. Compression applies to local option first. I mentioned that when at the time of passage in 2014 PPS local option levies, actually the compression loss was very high, and because of just a sharp run-up in housing prices, and that reduced compression loss tremendously. So compression loss improved, and assessed value increased sharply. Combined together, you can only see just an anticipated collection of property taxes. So a couple of things, improving compression loss and increase in assessed value, they actually, in my opinion, led to just unexpected increase in property taxes. And that is one reason why unexpectedly PPS collected additional revenues on top of the limits. So what the bill does in House Bill 4117 is increasing the upper limits of a local option of property tax revenues that school districts can keep and use within districts starting from 2018. But at the same time, because in 15, 16, and 16, 17, PPS collected more than their limits. So this bill makes provisions so that a school district that exceeded binding caps in listed school years can keep and use specified over-the-cap amounts without sending them to a pool of formula revenue. If a school district exceeds the cap, actually, the over-the-limit cap amount, over the cap amount actually should be sent over to formula revenue to be distributed for ADFW. Now, this this bill make provisions so that it doesn't happen, so that locally raised local option taxes, although exceeded the limit, local school district can actually keep that much money in specified years, not going forward.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think, put it in, I'm kind of a simple guy, so put it in simple terms, they've collected and spent too much money, so this bill would prevent them from having to reimburse the taxpayer.
Okay. But
Mr. Chair.
But yeah, okay, but
you first. You first, because
okay, why don't you, I'm sorry.
Because you're Portlandia, so I'm favorable, but this looks like a sledgehammer fix here. So you jump in first.
The I just wanted to clarify that they will be, in essence, paying it back. It will be made whole over time. Can you please clarify that for the record?
So what happened, yes, what actually happened was 15, 16, and 16, 17, PPS collected more,
yes.
Went over the limit.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And spent it.
And probably spent.
Right. However, going forward, the plan is what?
The plan is by increasing the limits that local districts can keep and use within districts. There are a couple of limits, actually. So this bill raises these limits so that for a while, school districts can raise local option taxes without worrying about going over the limit.
Right. Excuse me, follow up, Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you, Senator Hass. I wanted to just clarify for the record that they will be this over collection, they will be, in essence, not collecting as much in the future. Therefore, there will be no net loss.
Okay, so what happens, I see your point.
Yes.
So what
it's an important point.
What happens is by increasing the limits, first of all, there's much more breathing room. They can, the local option taxes will increase a lot. When I looked at preliminary data for 18-19, it's going to be over 90 million. So it's going to be, if not for this fix in this bill, the school district will be in another danger of collecting over the limit and sending over to the formula pool. On the other hand, because of fixes in this bill, not only they have additional breathing room, but at the same time, they don't have to face the consequences of returning perhaps a higher collection of revenue to the formula pool.
I'll pause for a moment. Senator Boquist is patiently waiting.
Okay, so. Not exactly what was explained to me, but that's right. So let me go back one step, because I mean, I'm just want to make sure, especially the Portland senator to my left understands that I get the whole thing and we need to fix this thing so that they don't lose any money. It's two questions jump out at me suddenly. that I thought about yesterday when everybody was lining up at the office store because I'm too busy working on other issues to, you know, have all these 15-minute appointments. So first question is, can you give an explanation, because you just said 15-17, at least a plausible explanation of how we managed not to recognize and how they managed not to recognize we were collecting a whole bunch of money that was frankly illegal. And what does this bill do now that we've realized, because this is like a three, I'm told at least a three-year-old mistake, and there was cash coming in, so somebody knew it. What does this bill do to ensure, even if we do everything in this bill, they don't make the same mistake again? I mean, somebody obviously wasn't watching because we collected a bunch more money, and good thing is it went to education. Good thing is we don't want to take it away at this point. But how did, this is a significant mistake, and some, no disrespect, bean counter someplace should have recognized this mistake was there, and now we're trying to fix something 3 years later at least. So is there anything in this bill, or how do we make the mistake besides, oh, it's real estate? No, it isn't. We were collecting money. Somebody knew they were collecting money over the top. And what does this bill do to make sure we don't make that same mistake, even if we raise the limits?
So let me explain this way. What PPS did actually was based on estimates when there was a vote in 2014. They followed probably every step at the time correctly in anticipating X amount of revenue, which was way below the limit. Mm-hmm. So they would not have worried about collecting over the limit. Now we have data 15, 16. There's a lot of data noise, of course, especially one-year data doesn't tell us the trend. Data blip, noise, probably. So we wait another year, look at the data, the same thing happened. Now, we have to dig into this issue. So we followed up, actually, and see what happened. And what it happened was, actually, because of just sharp run-up and assessed values at the same time with improving compression loss, PPS was collecting just way above anticipated.
Follow, Mr. Chair. And I don't think Dana knows the answer, but okay, this is a lot different. I'm fine with fixing this. I just like, okay, wait a minute here. The county treasurer collected X amount of dollars. In PP, I guess it's Portland Public Schools, right? Is that the acronym you're using?
Yes. Day?
Public
yes.
Board, okay. Yes. So the county collected this money, physically collected this money, and then physically transferred that money to the school district, who now had cash to operate the schools, and they did this at least 3 years in a row, and there was a lot more cash than they anticipated and what they expected. My question here is not fixing and holding them whole, because can we see the mistake? I could argue the upper limits, but okay, somebody knew there was more money than they anticipated. They spent more money than they anticipated. And now, I mean, you're saying the data set, but now 3 years later, okay, oh, wow, you know, we got extra money. And I'm told it's in, you know, significant in the upper, above the $10 million mark. The number we're starting out to do is something like $30 million. And I'm trying to figure out what it is we're going to ensure doesn't let that happen again, even if you raise the caps and say, hey, you can have some more money. I mean, how does this prevent, what does this bill do to prevent another run over the top? And then the second question, I guess, is if we're raising the caps, are we raising the caps and they're going to have to go back out to the voters at some point? Because, I mean, I'm guessing we're a couple years down the line here. So I'm slightly concerned on the accountability piece and have almost no concern on the fact we should fix it.
Senator Buckley, those are good.
And I don't think he can answer that.
And I think there are people up who are itching to get up here and
save themselves.
Explain this.
But Senator Taylor still has a question.
Thank you, Chair Hess. I understand people are wanting to come. I just wanted to clarify that. So, of course, I've spoken with Portland Public Schools, and I mean, there's no sense in holding back that they know that I was, you know, not impressed and not happy that all of this occurred. And having served on the Budget Review Committee for Portland Public Schools several years ago, and having audited Portland Public Schools in the past, I am, you know, this should not have occurred. So this was a mistake. And of course, I'm glad it's caught, and I'm glad we should fix this. I do think that Senator Boqvist is bringing up a good point, and there are perhaps what we need is someone to point out other places in the statute or the Portland Public Schools has in their policies stating what the safeguards are to prevent it from happening. That is not going to be spelled out in this bill because that's not the way that those types of statutes generally operate, right? I mean, there's other places for that, but I do think that that should be put on the record if possible, if there is some, if LC or somebody here can say, or if maybe they have their CFO here today, I'm not sure. I guess maybe they don't, but in order to correct this. I do want to clarify about whether or not that money basically, I think what Senator Boqvist was bringing up is that money going to be paid back, or is this just a three-year mistake that we're just going to correct it going forward, and that money's not going to, is it going to be paid back in future returns, or I mean future revenue, or is it not?
Okay.
Yeah, because if it's not going to be returned and we're just giving it as a wash, I just want that on the record so that there's no question that that's what we're doing. I'm just making certain because there was, I just want to clarify.
So the section two of this bill actually makes sure that the PPS can keep the money without any other consequences.
Okay, yeah, so I mean,
okay. Before I go, I just want to make sure once again we don't get this incorrect. I believe what we're saying, and I'm fine with this, is that Portland Public Schools, who has already likely expended these funds, doesn't have to pay the debt. When we say keep the money has already been used for educational purposes, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want it on the record saying, well, they just suddenly were given a slush fund and they're going to go spend it. And I don't think that's the case, and they can clarify that. I just want to make sure we don't make that mistake. So,
Dave, are you done with your presentation?
Yes.
Okay, then let's call up Portland Public. Courtney Wessling. Welcome.
Thank you.
You followed the conversation.
I did.
And I saw you twisting in your seat.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, Courtney Wessling, Government Relations, Portland Public Schools. So I'm going to be brief, and then I'm going to address a couple of the things that you mentioned just to clarify a couple of things. So first of all, thank you for considering this bill. It came over from the House 57-3 last Friday. So this is a bipartisan bill, and we really see it as a technical fix to something that occurred a couple years ago that, you know, you guys have all very nicely explained. So this is, as Day explained, voter-approved local option levies have been in existence since 1999, and we've had a local option in Portland Public Schools for that entire, as soon as we could have that, we had it. And this was a way to raise operating money as opposed to construction dollars. That is the bond, and we've had many successful bonds, we're very happy, but that's capital dollars, can only be used to build things. These are operating dollars. In 2016-17, for example, this money all went to teachers, about 827 of them. So I just want to make sure that that's clear. So we renewed our local option in 2014, and it'll be up again in a few more years. The reason we went out early to renew in 2014 is because of another issue that has not been raised, and I just want to also make that one clear. In 2013, a bill, House Bill 2632, passed relating to urban renewal. And what it did was it redirected, it allowed for local option to apply to urban renewal agencies for the first time. And so what it did is ultimately brought some additional revenue into the district starting in 2014. So we went out after that change, we went out to renew the local option, knowing that that change would impact our district. So that is another unintended consequence that plays into this. So I just want to make sure that that's on the record as well. So anyway, local option levies, as Day explained, they are, they happen when there's a gap between assessed value and real market value. It's tax on assessed value. As the real market has grown and it's gone, I keep saying gangbusters, as we know, in Portland especially, we've seen our home values and property values grow immensely and way more than what was projected. When we went out for our bond, it includes language about what's projected to come in. And it was much, much, what we've collected has been much higher than what was expected. So I want to be really clear there. And then obviously we have state statute that hasn't been updated in more than a decade around those upper limits. We're not asking to remove those limits entirely. We are just asking to increase them a bit to allow for some, as Day said, breathing room so that we don't have to, so we're maximizing what our voters have allowed us to do. If this money were to be paid back, it does not get paid back to taxpayers. It's related to formula revenue. So I just also want to be clear there. And then I think, the other piece is that, it's about time that these limits were updated. And then the piece about retroactive forgiveness, I guess, that we made a mistake. We have spent this money on teachers, and we, of course, now know about this. And I think the local option statutory limits aren't very well known, and other districts need to know that those exist as well. So I know that there will be more happening there to make sure that that's very, very well known for other districts that are close to this problem. Because it's not, we've faced it, we're in it, but there are other districts out there that are close to realizing this as well. So with that, I'm happy to take questions or have Morgan join me and then take questions, whatever works for you.
Questions, Senator Boquist.
I'm not quite sure where to start here.
I'm
being nice, and I'm very sympathetic to the problem. I got that. But
thanks.
No disrespect, Courtney, you're the government affairs person.
Yes.
Okay, let me just go back. We just listened for LRO tell us that we have in fact updated it. We have a CPI on this, and this is all moving forward, okay? I'm not sure I agree or disagree, but I'm actually willing to go some distance on this as far as I'm concerned. I see it, but the next thing is in Revenue Committee, one thing that we do know here, even our most junior member knows, is that we have these 3% caps. So great, the real estate market can zing up 126%, but we're still stuck with this 3% going up like this. And so everything you said, I'm just, okay, so what has this got to do with the bill? No disrespect again. So what is Portland Public School District? You have got a chief financial officer, you have a county treasurer, you've got more money coming in. It came in every year for 3 or 4 years at least. I'm told this magic number is, I was told $30 million by someone who represents you guys. I don't know what the number is. What is the number? What are you doing to make sure, even if we were, where's your fiscal accountability here?
Mm-hmm.
I see absolutely none, and I see no, you didn't make any presentation that says, okay, we found a mistake, we need to be better at it, the CFO is gonna track this, we're gonna do better coordination, we're gonna alert the superintendent that, mm-hmm. Revenues. I see nothing here other than help us fix this,
sure.
And we don't really wanna tell you what the problem is.
Happy to tell you what we know. This was brought to our attention in the fall, this past fall, years after the problem occurred. We have had quite a bit of turnover in our finance department. You've probably read about it. We have a brand new interim CFO, who many of you probably know from his days at DHS and at Portland Public before. And this is a real, this is a real issue. We've been having a lot of conversations. We've met with our county assessor's office because I think, we've been working with our financial advisor, Piper Jaffrey, who counsels a lot of other school districts as well, and really trying to understand how this happened and how this came to be, because, again, those projections were they were just not at all what was realized. But yes, we have been having this conversation internally around how do we have better controls and a better system in place to make sure that this doesn't happen again. We absolutely don't want to be in this situation again. It's not fun coming to ask for this. And I think there is a commitment at the district level to make sure that we are tracking this and being very clear and careful and working with our partners at the state level, at the state agency level, at the county assessor's level. And we also, as Senator Taylor mentioned, we also have a community budget review committee. So all of those stakeholders, it's very important that we're accountable to them and to you as a legislature. And we definitely don't want to hit this problem. And I think we're going to do everything we can to make sure that that is the case. And I think in this case, with the economy doing what it's done, you know, we will eventually hit a recession, and this would be a moot point if that were the case. But we're right now we're growing wildly in real estate market values, and it's so this will continue to happen if we don't have a conversation around around our internal control. And I'm sorry if I just confused myself. And
no, I mean your logic. I'm just not following at all. So, Day, listen here, okay? So make sure I get this right. In the property tax assessment world, we're already capped at basically the assessors, despite market growth, we're capped at a 3% growth. So even if the real market value goes up, we can only continue to increase 3%. Is that not correct?
Yes, and with some qualifications. So there will be new constructions. There will be new properties on board.
Right.
So net assessed value for Multnomah County actually was rising at sometime close to 5%, 4%, and 4%. So
And so the problem that we're talking is it's not, I mean, the swing in the market doesn't really affect existing, because if there's any place that we repeal 5 and 15, we lose at the ballot, it's going to be in the metropolitan Portland area, because they have the widest gap between all that stuff. And so so what we're really saying here is that because of new market growth, the 3% cap has been exceeded. The normal anticipated, sit in the back row, look at the report once a year, 3% has been exceeded by about 1.8% in Multnomah County simply in that 1 year because of new construction growth that's out there. So the issue isn't so much in to figure this out that, you know, if, even if there's a recession, we're still going to see a minimum 3% growth because we're so, the gap is so big in the entire Multnomah County. And I would just, Courtney, I mean, the takeaway here is all that stuff is kind of not germane. The real issue here is that you need more money in education, got that. The voters voted to it, got that piece. It's like, okay, even if we raise the cap, and who's doing the fiscal accountability? And good Senator Taylor to my left said, maybe you guys could tell us a little about, there's other statutes and other things. And other than the government affairs officer saying, oh, the CFO and them had turnover, and so we're all concerned about this, what checks and balances have you put in formally in place to say, hey, and I haven't even heard the number. I was told it was like $32 million. I don't know what the number is. Is that the right number?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm fine with all of that. I'm just pointing out that just raising the limit doesn't fix whatever mistake you had coming to here. And you get paid to tell us, yes, we're going to fix that, and I don't see anybody else figuring that out. I'm fine with the bill, Mr. President, or yeah. Mr. Chair. I just think, okay, we could be creating the same problem if there's no checks and balances in the other 20 districts or so up there.
Well, I think what's clear in this conversation is that some vehicle, maybe it's probably in the 2019 session, needs to be created to create those regulations or sidewars so that this doesn't happen again.
We don't disagree that an accountability measure would be helpful. We have not had a conversation about what exactly that would look like. We are happy to. We absolutely agree with you. And we need to figure out a way to ensure that this wouldn't happen in the future. And for other districts, but of course we're taking responsibility. We know that we made a mistake.
Would you mind if Morgan Allen joined you?
No, not at all.
While he comes up, do you have a question, Senator Burchard?
Yes, thank you. My thoughts are, fairly similar as my colleague over here. I'm actually stunned. You're the largest school district in the state. You deal with millions and millions of dollars. You had all these people working on finances. You got a school board. You got a budget committee. And then you come and say, well, oops, we made a $32 million mistake. I'm really, really disappointed. So I can take that at what you've said, and you had changeover and this and that, and it slipped. I just don't know how $32 million slips by. Or I can go to a conspiracy theory and say, you brought it up, you know, there's the old saying, sometimes it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. And if that is the case, that would really be disappointing, not only to me, but everybody in the legislature. So I hope truly that it was because of the inability of the Portland City Schools staff made a $32 million mistake. I really hope that is, because if it's the other, and that you're going to make a mistake again, and this is learned behavior, and you can come in here in 5 years and say, oops, we made a mistake, we need another $32 million forgiveness, you know, that's just not right. I just, Mr. Chair, I'm appalled. That's the biggest school district in the state. I'm just appalled.
Morgan Allen, did you have testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And Senator Barrett Sugar, obviously we have folks in all 197 school districts. Portland is one of our members. And we had a discussion. Some of the issues that you've asked here, many of our members asked on our phone call with our leadership within the last week or so. And we have decided to support the bill because our members overall believe this is a local control issue. The legislature has given school districts the ability to pass local option levies, and we endorse that. In this particular instance, I think one of the things that, a couple of things that made a difference when we talked to our folks is, the Portland Public Schools did not over-collect taxes. They collected taxes they're allowed to collect under the Measure 5 and 50 limits. The difference is there's statutory language in the state school fund that says how you appropriate that in your school district budget. And Portland exceeded the state school fund limits. They did not over-collect from taxpayers. That was one of the things that was compelling for our folks to hear, that their voters approved the full collection of this money. Portland did not account for it in their books appropriately, but they did not over-collect from the taxpayers or do something that they should not have done that's not allowed under law. That was one of the things that was important for our folks to hear. A couple other things, as you mentioned, this is not unprecedented. We looked back in history. In 2008, the legislature retroactively gave school districts permission to charge tuition for full-day kindergarten before Senator Haas and other advocates were able to convince the legislature to implement full-day kindergarten. Many school districts charged tuition. I was actually working at the Department of Education and was in a similar position as Ms. Wessling. As a government affairs person, we found out that districts had been doing that. The Department of Justice said that was not allowed. There was concern about school districts having to pay back millions of dollars, and the legislature stepped in and retroactively said, school districts, you are allowed to charge that tuition, and retroactively said you can keep that money that you were collecting from parents. So those were a couple things when we talked to our members that eased the concern. I think it's appropriate to ask, who's sort of, you know, watching the money and the accounting. And we've talked to the Department of Education. Their school finance staff are here, the Legislative Revenue Office folks and stuff. And I think this is now something that all of our school districts are aware of, although it obviously could potentially only impact a few school districts. So those were some of the things when we talked to our members, gave them some more comfort, and that's one of the reasons I'm here in support of the bill today. And I'd be happy to answer additional questions.
Senator Riley.
So do I understand right that if you had caught that mistake at the time, that before you spent the money, that extra money would have gone into the school distribution fund?
Mr. Chair and Senator Riley, that is correct, except if Portland would have known about the limits, they would not have collected the money. So it's sort of a chicken and egg question. If they had not made the error in the limits, they would not have collected the money, and therefore the money never would have existed in the state school fund local revenue pool. That was another thing that was very compelling for our members, that this is money that voters in Portland approved for Portland Public Schools. They did not intend it to be distributed to other school districts around the state.
Understood. Again, if they caught it after they collected the money, before they spent it, the correct remedy would have been to put that in the school distribution fund. Is that correct? Thank you.
Senator Burchard.
Let me ask you a question. Are you saying that your members condone the Portland School District in violation of state statute?
Mr. Chair and Senator Barrett Sugar, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it was a quite robust discussion amongst our membership, and questions about local option levies and equity and how we fund schools in the state. But ultimately, I think the thing that compelled them were some of the things I mentioned, and also the fact that the money's already been spent on educating kids and supports more than 800 teachers, and ultimately that our members support local control of the school districts, and the voters of Portland approved this taxation upon themselves to support their schools. So it was a discussion, and a very interesting discussion amongst our members. I will assure you of that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brokers.
I'd like you to...
I want to change the focus just slightly, and because I'm supportive of the fix. I mean, I don't really think we need to change the caps on and so forth, but I'm fine if the rest of my colleagues want to do that. But here's the point I think I need to make to you. I mean, every time, and this is the problem we get in the weeds, every session we come in, at least every full session we come in, we get the QAM comes in, day comes up, gives the brief. We wave the QAM around that's out there and says, you know, we're $1.7 billion short, and if we had this, you know, we could do all this, so on and so forth like that. And, you know, the bottom line is I don't know, we have the sales tax on the ballot 9 times, so on and so forth. You have to build a coalition. The reason we have a student success committee right now, and the reason 3 members of this committee are on the student success committee, is money. The reality is that I'm just pointing this out for all school districts to think about, because this is, you know, the brother and sisterhood of peer pressure, what is what I'm getting at here, which is absolutely critical, is that if it turns out, and that's not proven, but let's say it's proven, it turns out that we need to restructure, well, we do need to restructure revenue, but if we have to put more money in education and so on and so forth, you have to build a coalition to do that. That coalition will end on the ballot. Portland Public Schools, no disrespect, Courtney, has provided the poster children to defeat that on the ballot. So the superintendent and the school board down there better get on their high laurels right now and be publicly crucifying themselves that this went wrong, it shouldn't have gone this, we don't know why it happened for 3 years. But my point is pretty simple. You've become the anti-tax poster children of exactly why the system's broke. And there's no real, I've seen no real fix. And what I've heard is say, well, we're talking to LRO. I mean, they didn't balance the checkbook, okay? We're talking to Cole Gill and, you know, Reader and those people at Oregon Department. They didn't balance the checkbook either. I can imagine the conversation your association had on this. It's like, yeah, you've now, you know, we're trying to come up with this 18-month plan to figure out how to fix all this stuff, and you guys have become the poster children, and the place this is going to win or lose is Portland. So, Courtney, you need to take the message back to your board and your superintendent. You guys have created a huge problem for Student Success Committee, and I don't hear any answers. And pointing the finger to LRO and stuff is not going to. I'm fine voting. I'm just telling it. You've created it. You know, become the poster children for the anti-tax camp. And I perfectly agree with 100%. Perfectly agree. We should fix this. It's just you've now created a political dynamic that, you know, it's easy to sell on the opposing side if we really want to do a reform of education. So I mean, I'm happy to support this. I just hope you guys take that to heart, and you provide substance of. At the board level, at the superintendent level, and saying, let's please try and, you know, we realize we made a mistake. We've done all these sorts of corrective actions other than we've talked about it. I'm off my soapbox. I'm fine to make the motion when you're ready.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Hass. Obviously, I think it's a different, I appreciate the coming forward and the honesty and all that, and we've had the conversations and obviously in all of our offices and et cetera. You know, we all come at from these things at different perspectives. You already know it's where I've already stated that I obviously think there would have been a way to prevent this from occurring, knowing that when we go out for these, because we have this messed up system of how we go out and collect additional revenues, that they can it's you have to track to see if you're going to be hitting these limits and et cetera. I just want to, I do wish you would have brought the CFO, and I know that was not easy, and they're busy actually doing work in the district that could have maybe helped things. But with that being said, I just looked up the CAFR here, and in the CAFR, which I want everyone on the committee to understand that the districts, for auditing and accountability purposes, we have all the school districts more or less use, there's some exceptions, but use the same CAFR so that there's consistency across all the school districts, okay? So when they do their financial reporting, let me just clarify something.
What is CAFR?
The Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Okay. So anyways, so this is their big report that they do every year, and in here, I mean, it's, you know, a couple hundred pages, no one ever sees it, reads it, and et cetera, but this is what gets audited, okay? This is what they go back and look at. And they get, believe it or not, Portland Public Schools still gets all sorts of awards I just looked up this last one. I mean, they're getting recognized. There's all sorts of school districts that don't get this review. There was something wrong with the infrastructure. I would argue that a discussion, and that probably already is occurring with your financial folks, is that there may need to be a change for Oregon in the CAFR to build in a way to catch, do you see what I'm saying, Morgan? A way to catch this, because there has to be a trigger to alert folks that there's potentially a problem, and then having it be the same reporting across all the school districts, because not everybody is taking advantage of this, as we saw from the list. Mm. So on page 35, and then starting on page 133, is they have two different areas, one talking about the revenues, and then one talking about the assessed values and the property values and all this in these two different sections of the report. And you could see how, if those two sections, and obviously this is all done by spreadsheets, if those two sections of the CAFR are not communicating with each other, if you will, to put it in simple terms, then someone will have to literally, not manually, but they will have to go back and do a different review. Whereas I would say maybe there should be a suggestion by Portland Public Schools, the board, or working with the CAFR system, if you will, to change that, so that all the school districts in the state are paying attention to the same piece of information, because I think we've mentioned, and both of you talked about, that there's a risk that this could happen in other ways. So I just wanted to state that unsolicited advice, but the CAFR is what they all were, all the school districts work off of the CAFR. So that's what I would say.
Senator Saylor, that's very impressive.
It is. I had no idea what a CAFR was.
Well,
that's why I had to ask you, because yeah. It made so much sense.
Jonathan Eames, can you join our panel? You're signed up here. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames, and I'm here also on behalf of Portland Public Schools. Just a couple of clarifications from questions that were asked, because I wanted to make sure, and I went back and talked to the Oregon Department of Education there to make sure that it was okay to say as well. We've been working very closely with the Oregon Department of Education to your question, to the accountability, and I think if you were to ask them as well, they would characterize that they're making sure that this doesn't happen again as well. So it's not just conversations, I think, internally, even though those are definitely happening and policies are being implemented, but also at a state level to make sure. And then, Senator Bartsugar, because your question about violating statute, I just wanted to make sure that you knew that they didn't violate statute in any way. So it wasn't anything illegal that Portland Public Schools did. They went out with a levy of $1.99 in 2014, which was the same amount that was the previous time that they went out for a levy. And they're allowed to collect all of that. The difference is that if they do go over the limits, then there was a mechanism in place to figure out how that money gets redistributed back to the state school fund. But they didn't violate the statute by collecting the money, because they got that voter approved. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear, so you knew that there wasn't anything illegal.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Senator Boquist.
Okay. I think you should stop before you dig a hole.
Okay.
You didn't violate the initial statute. You violated the second statute because you didn't utilize the formula in redistribution. Here's my point again, and then I think you all need to back up.
Okay.
Stop before you dig a hole. The point we're having up here is that we're going to go around now over the next 18 months, at least three of us in this committee, to the student assessment. And the first thing we're going to hear is, like we've already heard now, is, well, don't do any more regulation or accountability because we're already accountable. And the first thing they're going to do is through a Portland School Board right in front of us with this problem right here. So you didn't violate the first one, you just didn't do the second one, which is most would say is a violation. I think I'm going to be surprised if this doesn't come out 5-0. The point I think everybody's trying to make, and I want to see this as bipartisan, is you're now getting beat about the head and shoulders because, hey, we have a bigger picture here, and we need to get your side to say, hey, we do have some accountability problems across the state, SBA, administrators, and we're willing to come to the table and work on those accountability problems to be part of the long-term solution.
100%.
Okay, and I'm just telling you, that's the goal I'm driving at right here, and, you know, I'll just point out in transportation, we had to lop a few heads off and put them on stakes, figuratively, of course, to get the package to go through so that everybody realized that everybody was serious about it. And at this point, you guys aren't helping yourselves by saying, well, it's just like, hey, the buck stops here. We screwed up. We're asking you to help fix it, and we're willing to work to find a long-term solution across the state.
Absolutely.
That's what I think I'm hoping you guys are saying.
100.
Absolutely.
100%.
Okay.
Well, why don't we leave it at that? Thank you, guys.
Thank you
for coming forward. This is what amounts to the Revenue Committee woodshed. And you just spent an hour in it. And I don't know about the rest of the committee. You can tell me if you're ready to go or not with this fix and with the pledge by me and others to put on some sideboards so this issue doesn't come up again next year.
Did you open a work session?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4117 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 4117 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Right.
No, I just want to put something on the record, please, just really quickly, Chair Hess, please. I just wanted to ask this LRO if in the 19th session, if I'm I'm lucky enough to still be on your committee, the, if we could just have an update on anything on the subject, please. That's all.
I just follow up, Mr.
Senator Boquist.
Since this is an education issue and I don't understand the CAFR at all, but I do understand the revenue piece, maybe LRO can keep not just an update, but an eye on what maybe revenue-style fixes we might need to put in the CAFR or whatever this is to make sure we have accurate accountability going forward. I don't know if that's something in your work plan, but I would suggest that it's something that could be advantageous to us in other committees in the future.
Thank you. Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Mr. Chair, you know, I'm really disappointed about the whole situation. I just, $32 million mistake. It's just unbelievable. But I will be voting yes on this. I will also be doing a nice floor speech. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bertschinger.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Oh, yes. Peachy Keen.
Chair Hass.
Hass votes aye. If only we had a Portland legislator. Senator Taylor, would you carry this bill?
God, you don't want it either.
Question to the carrier.
Yes. Yes, Senator Hass.
Senator Taylor will carry the bill.
Just for the record, I just want to let Senator Taylor know that before you come in this chamber, I've actually carried bills on the floor and voted against them. I just want to point that out to you.
Senator Boquist, you've set all kind of precedent around here.
I try to be helpful.
All right. As for tomorrow, we have nothing scheduled yet. So unless something changes, we're on a one-hour notice, but I don't foresee any kind of change that would necessitate a meeting for tomorrow. So we will adjourn and until Tuesday at 8:30. We are adjourned.
Thank you.